ways to study the Bible is to read the Bible and just become that one of the characters in the story that you read. I talked, I guess it was the Monday night class, it could have been Tuesday morning class, about just being that little boy who brought the 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Can you imagine what his day was like? Andrew took his lunch away from him. I mean, you know, there's no food, and all of a sudden Andrew's trying to take his food away from him, and that's just my imagination. He might have, I'm sure he would have gladly given it up, but you know, I don't know if it's lunchtime or what, but if it were about 10:30 or 11, he says, "Man, in an hour, man, look what I've got. I've got 5 barley loaves, and I've got 2 fish, and I'll really be ready to go." And then all of a sudden, here's Andrew come and say, "Could I borrow that lunch?" Well, I think my answer is, "Are you joking?" I'm not sure exactly, but that's what I'm talking about. And I think the book of Esther is an exciting book to read. And if you read the 10 chapters, some of them, you know, it's got, you know, 12 or 15 verses. You can read this in a hurry. I think the last chapter only has 3 verses. And just become one of those characters in everyone. How'd you like to be the king? And talk about all he's gone through. You know, King Ahasuerus. How'd you like to be Vashti? Imagine where she is. And, of course, the focus in this book is on Esther. But I think one of the great characters in this book to study is this, and we've talked about this last week. In fact, we introduced this class sort of last week by talking about, did you ever have a bad day? Well, we did that to talk about this guy Haman. And if you thought he'd had a bad day and misunderstanding what life was all about, you've got a real awakening tonight as these things begin to happen. Because Esther, and we'll not go into detail about everything that's involved, every Jew on earth is going to be killed on the 12th month of that year. Haman, an evil man, has worked it all out and has used the position he's got of being the favorite of the king of the world. Persia had 127 provinces. You know, if you think about Judea being one of the provinces, that's almost like 127 nations, you know, geographical regions over which he ruled. And one place it says in here, from India to Ethiopia. We've talked about Ethiopia. How do you get to Ethiopia? From Bible land, you got to go through the peninsula where Mount Sinai is. You got to get over there in Egypt and go way, way down the Nile, and that's where Ethiopia is. Where's India? Well, let's get in Jerusalem, and let's go up north, and then let's go over the Tigris, the Euphrates River. Let's just travel all the way across Iraq. Let's go down to where Saudi Arabia is. And over there, I believe, if I'm right, that's the Indian Ocean that is there. And then you got to go through Pakistan. You got to go through Afghanistan and Pakistan, and then you get to India. I haven't looked at a map in years. Did I get enough cities in there? Did I get too many in there? But that was the extent of it. In fact, to give you some idea of how far India is in biblical terms, when Alexander the Great was conquering the world, he conquered the whole world. I mean, he destroyed everything that was before him. He's the one who destroyed the Persians. And when he got over to India, he wanted to head to China. I mean, he wanted to just keep going and going, and his army rebelled. They said, "We're in India. That's as far as we're going to go." I guess some of them were homesick. Now, you look at a Bible map and think about going all the way from Greece as a soldier, marching all the way to India. That's how big this province was. And so you got King Ahasuerus, and then you've got Haman, who is the king's favorite person. And everything, absolutely everything, is going right in Haman's life. It was that, well, one little tiny thing. And that is, there's this guy Mordecai. And everybody else, whenever Haman rides anywhere in that province, everybody there is bowing down before him. But Mordecai will not bow down before him. Last week we talked about how Esther and Mordecai devised a plan some way, and how the details of that are not given, but they worked out that Esther would go before the king. And by the way, she could have been killed for walking into the king's presence without an invitation to come. But the king, instead of being upset at her, extended his rod to her and invited her to come into his presence. And he says, what can I do for you, Esther? I'll give you anything you want up until half of the kingdom. I want you to think about half of the kingdom. That is 63 and a half provinces. Is that a half of 127? 60 countries of the world. I'll give them to you. And she says, would you come for a banquet and would you bring Haman with you? And so Haman hears the fact that's going to get this great, great invitation, especially on that second day, and everything is so wonderful. I mean, of all the people on this earth, of all the queens on this earth, of all the kings on this earth, he's the favorite of both of them, and she's giving a banquet just for the two of them. And it's remarkable what happens. And so Haman is there at that first day for the banquet, and he heads home. And when he walks out of the palace, there's Mordecai standing as erect as he can. And when he gets home, I love this. I highlighted some of the things in one of the verses just so I'd make sure that that I emphasize them tonight. But he says whenever he got home, he called all of his friends together, and he told them, and this is important because I'll emphasize this tomorrow. Yes, there it is. Chapter 5, verse 11. Haman told them, his friends and his wife Zeresh, of his great riches. I highlighted the word great. He's not a poor man. Here's the king of the world. And Haman is so rich, you remember he gave 10,000 pieces of silver just so he could kill the Jews? That's a massive amount of money in Persian money. And so he's given 10,000 pieces, he give 10,000 pieces, and he talks to them of his great riches. And then he says, the New King James says, of the multitude of his children, of everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced above the officials and servants of the king. I am the great, other than the king, I'm the greatest person on this earth. And everything, it just could not be any better. And he says, and add on top of this, Esther invited no one to come, no one but me to come to the king's banquet that she has prepared. And tomorrow, I'm invited again by her. Already been to one banquet, me and the king and the queen of the world. And we're going to do the exact same thing tomorrow. And then I highlighted with a different color. You can do that. At least I can do that with my iPad here. Yet all this avails me nothing. Does that tell you how unsatisfying material things can be? Isn't that amazing? If you've got $1 million, guess what? Somebody's got $2 million. Now you can take this and multiply it in any, you just keep going on and on and on and on. There's always somebody that material things cannot bring happiness. I've thought really about this matter of drugs in our society. There is this drug of choice, but your drug of choice doesn't always stay the same drug. I mean, when you've done everything that drug can give to you, you got to be something better than this. And so, you know, there's always just adding on and bringing on all of these things. And that's the nature of sin. And he says, it's all worthless. You know, I've just got one problem in the world, and my one problem is far greater than anything else than this. And so his wife, Zeresh, and all of his friends said to him, we can take care of that. Build a 50 cubits high gallows, and in the morning, suggest to King Mordecai that Mordecai be hanged on it. And when that's taken care of, because the king will give you anything. Remember, he's got the signet ring of the king. We're going to read about that a little bit later tonight. That's how he was able to send that decree out that the Jews were to be killed. And we're going to read he never gave the ring back. There's one little statement that indicates. I just thought he handed it to him saying, you can do what you want to this. And he handed it back to the king. He has got the signet ring of the king in his possession. So he can do anything he wants to. And so says, take care of him. Go tell the king, kill this man. And then go merrily to the banquet. Chapter 6. Chapter 6 says that that night the king could not sleep. You ever have one of those nights? Yeah. And so he asked those individuals who were around him to bring the chronicles of the records of that nation, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai, that's Esther's cousin who had reared Esther, had told of two men, their names are here, the king's eunuchs, who had made a plan to assassinate King Ahasuerus. The king said, "Well, what have I done for Mordecai? What honor and what dignity have I bestowed upon this man Mordecai?" And the servant said, "You haven't done a single thing." Well, when the morning light comes, the king said, "Who's in the court? Who's out there? Because I need to have somebody to figure out a way, help me figure out how to honor Mordecai." Well, Haman is there. He's going to walk in. His life, it's perfect. It doesn't get any better. All he's got to do is walk into there where the king is and says, "Would you kill this guy over here?" And so he walks in ready to kill Haman, to kill Mordecai. And he no sooner entered the court of the courtyard of the king when somebody comes out and sees him and says, "The king wants to see you." Well, wowee, I just got here and the king wants to see me. And so he goes before the king and the king says, "Tell me, what can I do to show honor and show my approval of an individual?" Here's the exact, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?" When you are self-centered, there's no way you can come up with any conclusion. Who would he delight to? You know, he offered Esther half the kingdom. "What can I do to show honor to the man in whom the king delights?" And Haman thinks he's talking about himself, the honor being his, for he thought in his heart, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?" Haman says, "For the man whom the king delights to honor, Haman by name, let a royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king is ridden, which has a royal crest on its head." Does another translation have the word crown on it? I read that in that other translation, and I saw a horse with a crown, and I'm sorry, I just got tickled. I mean, my visual picture of that, of a Burger King hat on top of a horse, you know, but it's the crest. And you know how you can decorate up a horse and everything. I mean, they've really got this thing ready and put that royal crest, not just any ordinary crest. You get the crest of the king, you get the robe of the king, and you get the horse of the king, and it's the very clothes the king of the world has worn. It's his very horse he's ridden on. And the king said to Mordecai, "Take the robe and the horse that you suggested and do so for Mordecai the Jew who sits in the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you've spoken." You got a visual picture of what his face looked like? I mean, if you're producing a movie, what kind of face do you want that actor to have whenever all of a sudden self-centered Haman, who hates Mordecai, is now the one who takes Mordecai, puts him on the king's robe, puts the king's robe on him, puts him on the king's horse with the royal crest, and walks through the city saying, "This is the man who is honored by the king." I think he's had a bad day. I really, really think he's had a bad day. And so he does as he said. He goes through the city. Verse 11 says, through the city square, proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Mordecai goes back to the gate, and Haman hurried to his house, mourning with his head covered. Yes, John. Yes.
I mean, in the city, I'm guessing a lot of
people knew that. Yes. Because all of a sudden, I can't stand. So they build these gallows, and it said that they were built. So I'm sure people are looking and saying, hey, where are the gallows for? Yeah, Haman's going to hang Mordecai. Yes. Yeah. And you're so true in everything you said, John. That is so true. So Mordecai goes home with his head covered. You watch a basketball tournament? When a guy misses that last shot, what's he do with that towel? I mean, I got a mental picture. This is an American view of exactly what he does, but he is as dejected as he can be. Do you know what he looked like when he left that house? You know what his wife saw? She saw the absolute happiest man that's ever been on this earth. He is busting with pride. He is headed out there. This is going to be the best day I've ever, ever had. I'm going to get to kill Mordecai. I've got the gallows built. And Mordecai will be dead, and then I get to go to that banquet. Could not get any better than that. And the Bible said, and he went home with his head covered. Haman told his wife Zeres and his friends everything that had happened, and his wise men, and Zeres his wife said, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall... Hello? Who is greater than Haman? His wife got it figured out. You have been subservient to Mordecai. And so she says to him, you will not prevail against him. You will fall before him. You're no longer the choicest man of the king. And while they were still talking, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. And so this is that second banquet they go to. So the king and Haman went to dine, next chapter 7. And on the second day of the banquet, they already had the first day, the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you, and what is your request? Up to half of the kingdom it shall be done. Queen Esther said, if I have found favor in your sight. Oh, yeah. Of all the beautiful young women there are on this earth, the choicest one to be the king, be the queen. Yeah, she's had favor. Been queen about 3 years. And whenever he sees her in the courtyard, he extends the king's scepter out to her and keeps her alive. And so she says, if I have found favor in your sight, and if it pleases the king, let my wife be given me at my petition and my people at my request. King, don't let them kill me. First thing, he knows about this. First thing the king begins to say, he says, if we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated, for we have been sold, had we been sold to be slaves, I probably wouldn't have said anything, although the enemies could never compensate for the king's loss. King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther, who's done this? Who is he and where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? You think Haman's had a bad day? You think things not going right in Haman's day? I want you to understand. You ever had a day, you wake up and think it's going to be perfect? This is going to be the absolute best day I've ever lived. And now you're producing the movie and that camera comes in on you. what are you going to look like whenever he says, go lead Mordecai? I mean, I don't know if I'm an actor or not. Is it something like, is that the kind of face you'd have when that happens? But you haven't seen anything yet. You're the movie producer. And so he says, Haman, or who is he? And Esther said, the adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman. You want to make that face again and double it up? Things are going pretty bad, you know. Things really, really going bad. And Esther said, it's Haman. Haman was terrified. The king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace's garden. You see a little bit about the king if you'll stop and think about it. When Vashti wouldn't come, he reacted in a hurry. And now here's the second queen. She is being threatened. Her life is being threatened. Somebody is planning to kill the queen of the world. Who is that? It's the man that you trusted most in this kingdom. It's Haman. And the king is outside the room. He's out of the banquet. Haman stood before Queen Esther pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the queen or by the king. When the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. And the king says, will you assault the queen while I am in the house? I think that assault means rape. It may be, you know, physically hit, touching her or something like that. But while I am in the house, how dare you assault my wife? While I'm in the house. As the word left the king's mouth, these eunuchs who were there evidently covered Haman's face. Now, here's one of the eunuchs says to the king, there's a gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf. It's at the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him on it. Hang him high, I think we said last week. Wasn't that a movie? Was that a line in a movie or something like that? Hang him high. You know about 50 cubits? Is this ceiling 30, Dirk? It's about 30 feet. 50 cubits is 75 feet. I want you to just stand and look at this 5'8" guy right here. And I want you to just imagine stacking 15 of me on top of myself. You know, that's how tall that gallows was. I think he hates Mordecai, don't you? I mean, an 8-foot gallows would be tall enough for a little short Jewish guy. You understand what I mean? I mean, but here's one that's 75 feet up in the air. When Mordecai is swinging up there, everybody in the city will be able to see him. I made up that sentence. And so the statement is, hang him. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he prepared for Mordecai. And the king's wrath subsided. Subsided. The king, calm down after that. Calm down after that. I think it's just sort of interesting to just stop and to think about, if you wake up tomorrow and you're going to have the best day you've ever lived, don't be overly optimistic. You know, Rick, it's like you've got that little 2-foot tap-in putt to win the national championship, you know, back when you were playing professional golf. And all of a sudden, you know, as you draw it back and somebody sneezes and it distracts you and you jump up and knock it off the green. I mean, I don't know if that's a good illustration or not. I mean, what does it take to have a bad day? You can figure it. You ever have company come in over and burn the food? You understand what that's like? I remember Judy and I had not been married that long. We were in New Zealand, so we had been married 2 years, and we were having somebody over, and we were having spaghetti, and you know, and And so we dished it all up, enough for every plate to have enough spaghetti, and I was carrying two platefuls into the table there, and guess what I dropped? You got a major marital problem if you drop a third of the spaghetti that was going to be eaten that night. I mean, it's just funny I should remember that day. That was not a good day. Not that Judy's such a Christian lady. I think she would remember it, but not the way I not she, anyway. It was good. Okay, and so what happens on that day? I love chapter divisions get in your way, don't they? I mean, you read chapter 7. Okay, we'll start chapter 8 next week. No, you're missing the whole point. Mordecai is still swinging in the wind, in the breeze that's up there. And on that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman. Wonder what that house looked like. Here's the richest kingdom in the world. He's the second richest person in the world. And evidently there are servants in that house. And so he gives to Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. First time King Ahasuerus knows anything at all about Mordecai's relationship to Esther. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. This may not be the right expression. I have trouble sometimes with figurative language. Is that salt in the wound? I mean, you know, here's somebody that's got a sore and it's cut open and everything, and somebody pours salt in it. You know what that's going to be like? I know Haman's not here anymore. I know Haman, you know. I know Haman doesn't feel what's about to happen. Who is living in Haman's house? This guy's been sitting outside the palace, been living in the courtyard. Now where is he? He is in Haman's house. Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evils of Haman. The who? How would you pronounce that? Haman the what? Heath, how do you pronounce that? Not hard. Tell me, pronounce the first four letters. Agag. You remember Agag? Anybody remember Agag in the Bible? There is a possibility that this guy is an Agagite because he's a descendant of Agag. Go and utterly destroy the Amalekites. Guess who's king of the Amalekites? Agag. It is possible that this Haman, the Agagite, is a descendant of Agag. Otherwise, why is that in the Bible? I mean, there may be no significance to it. There may be something that I've overlooked, but at least you recognize the name Agag in there. Here, who are the Amalekites? They have been the enemy of the Jews since the time they left the land of Egypt. They don't even get to Mount Sinai before the Amalekites come down and tries to destroy the Jews to keep them from ever becoming a nation. And the Lord said, I'm going to reward you for what you've done. And he doesn't reward them immediately. I'm talking about punish the Amalekites. You've got to get all the way several hundred years later over to the time wherever King Saul is told to go and destroy the Amalekites. And who's over there? Perhaps a descendant King Agag is over there, and it's possible that Haman is still in that same lineage. I don't know that it is. I don't guess you would ever know, but just call that to your attention in passing. And so She implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman. Do tears have any impact? When Maria Hackshaw was trying to get down to the Caribbean to visit her grandchildren that were down there when the hurricane came through, and she wasn't even sure they'd let her in the country. She's carrying food down there, so they didn't have enough food to eat. I said, Maria, whenever you get to customs down there, you just look at that customs guy and say, I've got to see my grandchildren, and if you'll start crying, he'll let you in. Other than little puppy dogs, there's nothing that anybody loves any more than grandchildren and everything. And when she got in, by the way, I don't know if she had to use her tears or not. You women ever use your tears? Surely you don't. But, tears, does that have an impact? Yeah, sometimes it does. And so she is imploring him with tears. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, if it pleased the king, and if I found favor in his sight, and the thing seemed right to the king, and I'm pleasing in his eyes, let it be written. You ask me, you'd tell me you'd give me half of the kingdom. Here's my request. Let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come on my people, or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen? Simple enough. No, not so simple. Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and to Mordecai, so he's there obviously, indeed I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they've hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay his hands on the Jews. You yourself write a decree concerning the Jews as it pleases you in the king's name, and seal it with the king's signet ring, for whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring can be revoked. So they're in the situation of trying to revoke this decree. Well, why couldn't he just send out a letter and revoke it? Because the Persian law was that no law once given by a Persian king could ever be changed. Say it this way, there's no way to amend the Constitution. Persian law. That really worked to the Jews' advantage during the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. When they were trying to build the temple, trying to rebuild the walls, and those Samaritans that were there were doing everything they could to keep them from rebuilding the walls, they sent a letter. The enemy sent a letter back to the king of Persia and says, these are your enemies. We've got to stop them from doing this. And the Jews' answer was, you check the records. We are here by the decree of a Persian king, and that law cannot be changed. Well, now what did Haman's letter say? Well, you remember they cast lots to decide when they would kill all the Jews. And it's going to be in the 12th month. We're not to the 12th month yet. But on a particular day of the 12th month, any Jew that is on this earth can be killed by any person on this earth, and you can take possession of their goods. And that law cannot be changed. How are you going to stop it? That's the law. Well, we may not have time to fully emphasize all of this. He says, you write this decree. verse 9 of chapter 8. The king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, in the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day. And it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews and the satraps, the governors and the princes of the provinces, there it is, from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, its own language, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in the Hebrew language, in the Jewish language. So he wrote it in the name of Ahasuerus and sealed it with the king's signet and sent out the letters. What on earth did he write? By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives. What does it do? On that day when any Jew can be gathered, you're going to find them, but they're all going to be in one group. And they're going to be there together to protect their lives, and they have the right to destroy, to kill, to annihilate all of the forces of any people or province that would assault them, including little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. That day doesn't sound as exciting as it did when they first got that first letter, did it? When that 12th month come, you can go and take any Jewish possession you want. Just go over there to his house, kill him and his family, and you can have absolutely anything. You can take that. Wait a minute, there's a problem though. They're not going to be sitting over there unarmed. They're going to all be together, and it sort of rolls the dice whether you get their possessions or they get yours. And while you have a right to kill them, they have every right to kill you, and they know you're coming. The Jews know you're coming. Now the Jews have got 9 months to get ready. And so they buy from the Taliban and from the ISIS people AK-47s, and they're all standing. They've got all of these weapons that are there ready to protect themselves. That's not exactly what's in the text, but that's a picture of it, isn't it? How would you? If you knew somebody was going to come into your house on a particular day, what provision would you make? You would leave no stone unturned to protect your family. You'd booby trap everything that's there. What I'm trying to do is to help us get the emotional feelings of these Jews. You know, the worst thing that's ever happened is that first letter. It's the end of Judaism. That's a bad day. Do you know how a bad week can turn into one of the best weeks you've ever lived? It did it. Well, we've only got about 3 chapters. I think we're going to finish Esther, don't you? We got one more time. There's some good stuff left in this book. I hope you'll be here next week. Thank you very much.